Be seated. So as we think this morning about some kind of marvelous things, I was reminded of about a year ago, I fell down one of those YouTube traps. Maybe you've been down one before. A video pops up and you click on it, and before you know it, you've watched like 10 or 15 videos, and you're like drawn into it. Well, the rabbit hole that I ended up going down was videos of the world's strongest man competitions. Have any of you seen some of these videos or maybe one of these competitions before? I've got a couple pictures to show you here. So this is one of a guy pulling, you can't see him, but there's actually several monster trucks. He's dragging them down the road. The next one, they're lifting what are called Atlas stones, which are these giant stones. They each weigh different weights, and they try and put them up on a pedestal. And then the final photo here is of them tossing kegs over like a pole vaulting. That's incredible. Guys come from all over the world whose muscles have muscles, right, and compete in these competitions that shouldn't be humanly possible. But there are others who show great feats of strength as well. Maybe you've read in the past, there have been a couple of news articles of moms who have lifted cars off of their children in desperate attempts to save them. Or people who have swam against currents that they shouldn't have been able to rescue someone out in the waters. And most of the time what happens is after the adrenaline wears off, they crash. Because the body isn't supposed to do some of those things. Or maybe you've heard stories of people doing miraculous feats of strength when they're on drugs. I had a friend who was a cop who once told me a story about coming into contact with a gentleman who was on PCP, and he literally took a car and flipped it like it was a feather. Drugs like that inhibit the brain's pain sensors and the part of our body that says, that's not a good thing, you're going to hurt yourself. But all of that being said, the body is an incredible machine and can do things beyond what we think are possible. And Jesus, in our reading for this morning, is going to come across one of these strong men. But he doesn't get his strength from pumping iron or from an adrenaline rush or drugs. He gets his strength from demons. And this is a crazy story. And so join me. We're in Mark chapter 5. If you've got your Bible with you, go ahead and crack it open, or there's a couple in the back. So Mark chapter 5. Starting in verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. And we need to actually stop there for just a moment, because there's some important information even in just that first verse. And part of that is that if you were with us last week, you would know that Jesus told his disciples that they were going across the lake. But something happens on their way across the lake. They run into a storm. And with a word, Jesus calms the storm. But he had promised them that they were going across the lake. And now they're there. They've made it. Jesus was true to his word, even though something terrifying happened in the middle. They've now made it to the other side. And the land of the Gerasenes is actually within the nation of Israel, But although it's within the nation of Israel, it's mostly at this point in time occupied by Gentiles, which means it's an unclean land, if you will. And so the Israelite people, when kind of hearing this story maybe for the first time, might not have been surprised by what comes next. Verse 2. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. So no sooner have the disciples docked their boat from the storm, probably still dripping wet, and a demon-possessed man comes running at them. It's gonna be a long day. Oh, so what is going on with this man who comes at them? Well, verse 3. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with chains, for they had often been chained hand and foot, and he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day amongst the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. That's a pretty intense scene. In fact, Mark repeats himself twice here in one of the things that might have caught your attention, which is that the man has broken the iron chains that he has been placed in. Now, it was probably for his safety and for the safety of the people, but still, he's broken the chains. And so we meet our first chain breaker in the story for this morning. But if I was to guess, I would have to bet that when you hear that title, the chain breaker, the demoniac is probably not the first thing that comes to mind. And yet again, Mark tells us twice that he's the chain breaker, and so apparently he's trying to draw our attention to this fact. But being awed and wondered by the strength of this man is not the only thing that catches our attention. No, this is a pretty horrifying scene, actually. The text says that the man is wandering and living in the tombs, an unclean place, a place that would mean that he was segregated and ostracized from his family and from society. And not only that, later we learn that he is wandering and living in the tombs naked, and so he's been dehumanized. And he is night and day screaming and cutting himself. So I think our hearts are just supposed to break for this man and the things that he is going through. You see, the scriptures tell us that the devil has come to steal, kill, and destroy. And that's exactly what's happening to this man. And I have to just kind of wonder if maybe not in the same ways, but in maybe similar ways, some of us are experiencing the same things. We're feeling ostracized or rejected from our families, or we feel like the devil has come and stolen away our peace and our joy. But our text for this morning has hope for us, because Jesus went through the storm just for this interaction. And for you, for you, he went all the way to the cross. But we haven't yet heard how Jesus is going to respond to this man yet. And so we pick it up again in verse 6. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. And he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." I don't know about you, but if I was one of the disciples at this point, I would probably need a new pair of pants. Because this crazy man, naked, comes running at you screaming, and then falls at the feet of Jesus and continues to yell at Jesus at the top of his lungs. I would probably be like, "Nope, I'm good." What next? Right? But although the disciples are probably terrified, do you think Jesus is terrified? Is he trembling in front of this demon? I mean, the passage says he tells the demon to flee, so maybe it's like, "Please, no, get away." Or is it more like a guy shooing a cat out of a chair? "Would you just leave? Come on, get out of here." I bet it's probably more like the second. You see, the devil is not the chain breaker in this story. In fact, the British theologian Adam Clarke once said this: "Even the devil himself has a chain, and he who often binds others is bound himself." The devil is not one of the chain breakers this morning. He is bound. In fact, we heard a while ago in our stories of Job that the devil even has to ask of God permission to do something. And we'll hear later in Revelation that God binds the devil for eternity. And so he knows that his doom is sure and it's coming. And so although we are mindful of him, we do not have to fear him or fear the demons. Now, the scriptures do tell us to be mindful. In fact, in 1 Peter, it says this: "The enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." So we don't fear him, but we recognize him as an enemy that we need to be mindful of and cautious of, because he prowls around like a roaring lion waiting to pounce. Because the devil's attacks on us, they typically aren't like a crazy man charging at you. No, they typically look more something like this. You're sitting on the computer scrolling through Facebook, and an ad pops up. And it sparks a thought in your mind that you haven't wrestled with for quite a while, but there it is again. And you just can't get it out of your mind. And maybe you give into it, and maybe you don't. But several months later, there it is again. And it pops back into your head, and you're frustrated this time because I thought I had dealt with this and I thought I was done with thinking like this, but the devil has waited for an opportune time to spring it back on us. And so one of the pleas from our text this morning is to not fight him alone, not to be ostracized like this man is in our text, but to drag the darkness into the light, which means bringing it to someone else, which is a scary thing. Because we're not sure what those people might think of us or say to us, or if they might reject us. But I would argue ultimately, even those thoughts are thoughts of the devil trying to convince you not to let someone help you. Because the scriptures also say that the one that is in you, that being Jesus and the Holy Spirit, is greater than the one who is in the world. And then it'll go on to say later that the Son of God appeared to destroy the works of the devil. And so we let others speak that into our lives when we let them in to the things that we are dealing with. When we name it and say what it is. And so Jesus lets us in a little bit more on what's going on in this man's life as well. Verse 9. Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." I think this is one of Hollywood's most favorite verses within the scriptures, especially in the horror genre, right? "My name is Legion, for we are many." I mean, it has this aspect of it, this air of it, of striking fear. The name itself represents a Roman legion, which was a terrifying group of men. In fact, it was about 6,000 men who knew how to enforce their will and desire upon others. And so the demon claims this name, saying, "We are many." Now remember, this is the name that the demon gives himself. So there is a possibility that maybe he's just trying to, like, you know, terrify the disciples or us, you know, which is probably working. But also, he is talking with Jesus. And so more than likely, he's telling the truth. And so it is terrifying, because what Hollywood leaves out is the context. What Hollywood leaves out is the hope of Jesus. And without the hope of Jesus, demons are terrifying. In fact, without the hope of Jesus, most of the things that we engage in this world are terrifying. But we also have to be cautious not to blame everything that is terrifying in this world on demons. Because a lot of people try to do that. Oh, you have a mental illness? Well, that's a demon. Oh, you have depression? Well, that's a demon. Oh, you have fits of anger? Well, that's a demon. Oh, you struggle with alcohol? Well, that's just the demon of alcohol, right? But unfortunately, that does two things. One, it releases us from the blame because, well, if it's a demon, then I don't have anything to, you know, confess for. But two, if everything is a demon, well, then people don't get the proper care that they might actually need. Because we are both spiritual and physical beings. But that also means we can't go solely the other direction either and say, well, demons just, they don't even exist, there's nothing to them. Because then we don't get the spiritual care that we need. And so we have to find a balance between the two. And so as we find this balance between the two, what does Jesus do? He's got a man who is possessed by a demon standing in front of him. Well, verse 10. And he begged Jesus again not to send him out of the area. And a large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hill. The demon begged Jesus, "Send us amongst the pigs. Allow us to go into them." And he gave them permission. And the evil spirit came out and went into the pigs. And the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep banks into the lake and were drowned. So with a word from Jesus, the demons vacate this man. Jesus doesn't have to beg the demons. In fact, the demons beg him. From the beginning, they seem to know their place. But what is this stuff that they're begging Jesus for? I mean, why do they say not to send them out of this area? Well, as much as we've been trying to stay within Mark's gospel for this and not kind of look at the others, I think it is helpful in this instance to consider the gospel of Luke. Because what Luke says when he recounts this story is he uses the phrase, the abyss. And so the demons are asking, don't send us into the abyss, which is the place ultimately coming for them of destruction in the end. And so that kind of makes sense to us. They don't want to be destroyed. But what's this whole thing with the pigs? Why do the demons ask to be let into pigs? And then why does Jesus let them and then they get drowned in the lake? It's kind of a weird part of the story. And the reality is, we don't know. There's a lot of kind of interesting and good explanations for why this happens, but Mark doesn't tell us. Jesus doesn't explain it to us of why it happened. But there are a couple of things that we can take away from this. The first is that, well, the demons had to ask Jesus. Again, they couldn't do it on their own. And the second thing is that the pigs, right, are an unclean animal at the time. The Jewish people were not allowed to eat pigs or raise them. And so the fact that there is a pig farm within the nation of Israel is not a good thing. And so some scholars have suggested that what Jesus is doing here is he's trying to kill two birds with one stone. He vacates the demons out of the man and also destroys this criminal pig enterprise within the land of Israel. And although that's kind of interesting, I don't quite think that's what Jesus is trying to do here. Or maybe what's going on here is actually that this whole fiasco with the pigs is a plot of the demons. Because demons are mischievous and cruel, and they don't want Jesus to do what he came to do. And so they figure if we run and destroy all of these pigs, it'll cause havoc for Jesus, which actually is what ends up happening. Because of the death and drowning of all of these pigs, Jesus has issues in the area coming up, and we'll see that here shortly. But maybe it's something different. Maybe Jesus allows them to go into the pigs when their desire is not to be destroyed, because his whole plan was to destroy them. Because that's what Jesus does to unclean things. He destroys it. He drowns it. And maybe the drowning here is actually supposed to spark and remind us of something else. Maybe of the drowning of our baptisms, which is what happens to us. The sin, the doubt, the uncleanness that we have is drowned in the waters of our baptisms. And then brought forth from that is a new creation, one into new life. And so maybe we're supposed to think of that as we hear this story of what happens to these unclean spirits and of ourselves as well. And so, what is the response then, after seeing these two kind of miraculous events from the people watching? Because there are obviously people watching the herd of the pigs, and so they've now seen two things. They've seen the freeing of this man who has been possessed by demons, and then the drowning of 2,000 pigs. So what do they do? Well, verse 14. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this to the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. So they run off and tell everybody in the area what has happened. And then they come back, and when they do with the others, they're afraid when they see still this man in his right mind sitting before Jesus. And I wonder if we're also supposed to connect here this miraculous event with the miraculous event that just came before it on the water. Because the disciples were afraid then of Jesus' power, just as the townspeople seemed to be afraid of Jesus and his powers here. But they actually have two different fear responses. Because the disciples' fear and awe of Jesus lead them to worship him. The townspeople's fear and awe of Jesus lead them to reject him for fear of what he might do next. And that's what we see in verse 16. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave the region. So these townspeople respond in a different manner to seeing Jesus' work and power. And the same thing happens today. People have differing responses when they see the work of Jesus in the lives of others, or maybe even in their own lives. And sometimes, all as they can see is the swine. All as they can see is the loss. But Jesus didn't come for the pigs. Jesus didn't come for the demons. He came for the man. He had compassion on the man. And the townspeople have forgot that. They're so focused on the loss that they have experienced that they don't see the goodness of Jesus in the restoration of this man. And so maybe what Jesus is doing with the scenario of the pigs is giving the people a choice. Their possessions or salvation. Which are they going to hold on to? Which is more important to them? You see, this also harkens back to the story of Job. God gave Job a choice as well. As the devil was causing havoc, only after having been given permission, Job has a choice to make. He can either choose to continue to love God, or he can hold on to his possessions and all that he has and curse God for having taken it away from him. And it seems maybe Jesus is giving the townspeople this same choice. Hold on to your possessions, or hold on to me. But remember, he's already told them who he is. He's shown them his healing powers and what he can do before kind of giving them the choice. And so that becomes the question before us this morning as well. What are the things that maybe we're holding on to, the chains that bind us, that we need to let Jesus free us from? The things that we say, Lord, you can have everything in my life except for this. And what's your except for? Lord, you can have everything in life except for my relationship. Because I know that I really probably shouldn't be dating this guy, but he's kind of cute. So, you know, would you just stay out of that part of my life, God? Lord, you can have everything in my life except for my job. Because I know that it's all consuming in my life, and I know that I really haven't spent time with my family or my friends very much, and I know I've missed a bunch of things because of my job, but I'm making really good money. And I really don't want to give that up to you. What are the things that maybe need to be drowned in your life? Because sometimes the choice is put before us. Draw closer to God or closer to these other things. Because sometimes Jesus gives us what we ask for, even when our choice is the other things. Verse 18. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. So they ask Jesus to go. He says, okay. But there's something interesting here. This man who has been healed is now the one begging Jesus. This kind of seems to be a trend throughout this passage. First, the demons beg of Jesus multiple times, and then the townspeople beg of Jesus, and now the cured and healed man is begging of Jesus. But what is really interesting is that both the demons and the townspeople, Jesus says yes to, but he says no to the healed man, which seems interesting. But ultimately, the things that they had asked for, they don't lead to their good. They might have been given what they wanted, but it wasn't for good. And Jesus knows that as he says no to the man who has been healed, because Jesus has something better for him in saying no. And I don't know about you, but there have certainly been times in my own life where I have been glad when Jesus has told me no, because what I asked for wasn't to my benefit, and he had something better planned for me. And so this is what Jesus tells the man instead. Verse 19. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go to your family. Tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." Verse 20. And so the man went and began to tell in the Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him. And all of the people were amazed. You see, when Jesus put to death the demons from that man, he doesn't just leave the man on his own. He gives him new life and new purpose. And he does the same for us. When we put aside the things in our life, when we allow him to kill those bad things in us, he gives us new life and new purpose. And this man's new purpose is to go back and to tell everyone what has been done for him. And he does. He goes and shares the news. In fact, to such an extent that history and archaeology tells us that the Decapolis, which actually means 10 cities, meaning he didn't just go back to his own town, but he went to all of the towns in the region, but that this area of the Decapolis is one of the most profound Christian areas in all of the first century. And so this area that was originally unclean and had originally rejected Jesus becomes one of the strongest Christian areas in the first century. Maybe Jesus had a point in telling the man no. And maybe it's also a great reminder to us that Jesus didn't leave those people on their own, even after they had rejected him. He sent someone else to them. The person that they had once tried to bind has now come to set them free from their actual chains. The person they had once tried to bind has now come to show them the true chain breaker. And that same path lies before each of us as well. We have the opportunity to share the same story. In fact, for most of us, we're going to have that opportunity potentially tomorrow, or maybe later this afternoon or early this week, because somebody is going to come up to you and ask you, "Hey, what did you do this weekend? Did anything interesting happen over the weekend for you?" And you'll have the opportunity to tell them, "You know, I went to church on Sunday, and I heard this really great message, but it was about Jesus and his power and authority over the devil and thousands of demons, over the darkness in this world, and how he breaks us of our chains, the ones we can't see, drowns the old way, and brings us to new life." Man, I'd love for you to hear and experience the same thing. And we can invite them to church to hear it for themselves. And it's really that simple. Because it's something that we've experienced. If you're here this morning as a Christian, then you have been set free from your chains. Christ has done that for you. And now that's your testimony to go and to share for others. That maybe, just maybe, they might respond as the people did in the end of our text in verse 20 there, where it says, "And they were amazed." Not amazed at a man who could break iron chains or who could lift a car, but amazed at a man who can break into the darkness, who can break the chains that we all really worry about. Maybe they can see that. Maybe we can see that and have a reminder of the one who truly wears the title, the chain breaker. Amen.